Beyond Cataclysm presents, for your listening pleasure, What is Roleplay?
Hello and welcome to What is Roleplay, a podcast from Beyond Cataclysm, exploring the very basics of roleplay, roleplay games, and what it means to play those things and be part of this weird world. We explore the nuts and bolts of how to play roleplay, even if you don't know anything about roleplay games at all. This podcast is aimed at a level that assumes no prior knowledge. You might want to go all the way back to episode one, and we've got a bit of a kind of an intro to things there, but feel free to listen from this point. We have interviews with amazing designers from the indie design scene, and we look at games you may have heard of, that you may not have heard of, and that you should have heard of. And we have an actual play, a live play example at the end. Today, we have with us the wonderful, and I'm going to pronounce this perfectly in French, Tom Martin. Is that right?
Spot on pronunciation, yeah. Hi, Chris. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a long time since I've done a podcast in English, so I hope I'm not too rusty, but it's a pleasure to be here.
I mean, we could do it en français, mais...
that would be very limited.
Mon parler pas de formidable.
Right.
But yes.
That would be a 5 minutes podcast.
Yeah. Où est la discothèque? So this is Colin Martin. You may have heard them from Meanwhile in the Subway, Two Summers. Any other games we should shout out there?
I got a game out. I got two games out last year, actually. One of them is Feathered Adventures, which is basically a role-playing version of DuckTales. And then I ran a Kickstarter campaign last month as part of the ZineQuest. It was called Three Games About Life. So it's three mini games. I will probably talk about some of them in the podcast, I think, because they're somehow related to the subject. And it's in the late pledge stage right now. So if you missed it out, you can still check it out.
Awesome. So I'm your host, Chris Lowry, he, him. I am an author, RPG designer, publisher, lots of other hats that I wear. You can find me online as @CMLowryAuthor. And we are going to talk today about diceless roleplay games. Let's do, what is a diceless roleplay game, Com?
Well, you know, as the name indicates, it's a role-playing game where you don't use dice. And so I got to thinking when we chose the subject together, what exactly does that mean? And so my first thought was, why do we use dice in role-playing games?
And, I mean, for people who aren't familiar with role-play games, and I imagine people who are familiar probably have encountered dice, but
right.
What commonly happens, isn't it, you say, I'm going to do a thing, my character is going to, I don't know, drink some water. I said that because you just drank some water. And then you roll your water drinking skill with I'm going to roll a dice. I don't know if that got picked up, but you roll a dice, and I rolled a 3, and my water drinking skill is a 2, which means that I've rolled over my water drinking skill and have successfully drunk some water.
Yeah, that's right. That there's a lot of ways to use dice, but usually, like you just said, it's like roll against a target number. Sometimes you have to roll under, sometimes you have to roll over, and if you succeed, your action, you do the action, basically. And you know, there's something, and then, you know, when we talk about dice in role-playing games, that's actually, you know, a whole thing, because most you know, your grandparents' board games use generally six-sided dice, like this one, like it's the basic one. But in fact, there's a whole lot of...
We just held up a six-sided dice to the screen there.
Yeah, sorry,
for those of you who are intruding on our homes right now and can look at us.
Yeah, that's right. I actually have a bowl full of dice just next to my desk. So then there's the eight-sided dice, there's the 10-sided dice, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to show it them all, but...
The 11-sided dice, the 12-sided...
Yeah, this one has 30 sides, this one.
Oh, hang on.
Which is very useful because... I'm a teacher in my day job. So what I do when I need to, you know, make a student speak is I roll the die and I say, you know, I'm not the one who chooses. It's the die. So it's the a good randomization
So I've got a 1 kilogram 100-sided dice here.
Okay,
which is definitely a table denter.
But anyway, so I get the appeal of dice. You know, like it's very satisfying to hold something in your hand and then you roll it. It makes a sound. Plus, as I said, you associate it with board games. So I like dice. You know, it's fun. But we can do without them in role playing games.
Well, yeah. So there's a limitation to them. I mean, the plus side of them is that they add that randomization, and so they can add a real feel when we're playing role play games. We're creating a world, aren't we? And mm-hmm. the plus side of that is you can have that world make decisions for you.
That's right.
You know, so like there, if I'd rolled a one on my water drinking skill, water would have poured all over my chest and carried on pumping out, the room would have flooded with water. And that's something that can, you know, I've put my own inventiveness into flooding the room with water, but like it's given me a prompt for where the narrative goes, which can be very helpful, but it can also be limiting.
Yes. Well, the first thing is actually you don't necessarily have to use dice if you want to have this sort of prompt or this sort of rule in your game, mechanic in your game. There's a lot of other ways to randomize, you know, to say I'm not the one who decides. Let fate be the guide. And the most common one, I think, in games that don't use dice is cards. Playing cards, like you can use a regular deck of cards that many people have already at home. And cards are good because they're also something physical. We're used to them, so we know, you know, how it works, etc. And there's like 1,000 ways to use cards as a randomization tool that you can't do with dice. So the most, you know, you can use them in the most basic way, like dice, like say, okay, let me pick a card at random, and if it's that number or this number, it fails or it succeeds. But then you can also do things depending on the suit of the cards, like is it red or is it black? Is it spades or is it clubs?
A common thing you see is when that's being used is often, you know, like the reds are like a positive thing and the blacks be a negative thing.
Yeah.
And it is interesting because, I mean, in fact, I have behind me, what size dice do you think this is? Again, this is great podcasting.
12-sided?
No, these are 13-sided dice.
Oh, interesting. So as many as the number of cards in a suit.
Well, exactly. So one of our games is Lucky for None, which is the world's only D13 game, or probably the world's only D13 game. But one of the things I realized only recently, the game came out like 2 years ago, but only recently I realized that is just the same as the number in a deck of cards. But the thing is, what's really interesting with the deck of cards is it sort of breaks into different options, doesn't it? So you've got those suits, you've got just black and red, you've got picture cards and normal. And then what it also adds in, which is quite a nice one, is it adds two jokers. So you've got like weird extra options there.
Yeah. And on top of all of that, you also have the option of combining the cards. Like you've got many games which say, okay, you can do this action, but only if you draw out cards that make out a pair or three of a kind or a full house or whatever. So I think I prefer cards to dice because of this range of options that you have. Look, like as a game designer, when you start to say, okay, I'm going to write the system of my games will be based on cards. That's very nice because you have this whole range of options. And it's also a nice for random tables, which is a thing that, you know, role-playing games are fond of. Like, okay, the characters are supposed to meet someone in the forest. I don't know who it's going to be, so let me roll the die and compare the result of the die to a table that was prepared for me. I roll two, they meet an elf or something. And again, with the cards, you can have many options. You can do a 54-entry table. You can do a 2-entry table. You can do, you know, a whole lot of things. So that's very nice to have.
Yeah, I think another mechanic I'd mention with dice, with cards, Unbound by Rowan Rook and Descartes. I'm sure there's other games that do it as well. Your deck of cards, you can draw. So you actually you're going to burn through a deck of cards like
That's right.
permanently,
Yeah.
because as you build up your character, you might strengthen their armor, but and you draw on the cards, or as they take a wound, like you draw on that six. I can't remember exactly the mechanic, but if that six comes out, it's not just that you've rolled a six, but you've also got a six and whatever horrible things written on that. And it's a lot harder to draw on a dice, isn't it?
Yeah.
It
Yeah,
is done
definitely.
in the Die RPG, also by Rowan Rook and Descartes. If you play the Fool, you get to put pluses and you get to draw
Right.
pluses and minuses on a dice, which sounds complicated, but looks. I mean, that game is next level role play. That is a
Yeah, that's right.
hard game.
Yeah. But yeah, so basically, once you stop saying like, okay, role playing games equal dice, you have a whole lot of options, so you can do cards. I saw some games which use dominoes as a rule system. You can do I wrote a game where you have to use, I don't know if that's the word in English, Mikado sticks, like the game with sticks of wood sticks of different colors, and you shouldn't touch them when you remove one.
Yeah, I
I don't know.
do. I'm trying to think. It does have a name in English as well. But yeah,
But
the one
you see what I mean.
you chuck a pile of sticks on the table
Exactly.
and they're coloured on ends. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so then you can have, like that, you can have skill-based systems, a whole lot of things. If you want to keep this randomization thing in your game, which you don't have to, actually, you can
Well,
also.
we'll move on to completely getting rid of randomization
Okay,
next.
right.
I think I've got,
Okay.
I'm just trying to think if there's any other examples. I think there's at least
Well,
one more. So there's the Jenga Tower. I don't know if you call it
that's right.
Jenga.
Yeah,
So
I
games
do.
like The Wretched or what's it
Dread.
called? Dread. Where you pull every time you do something, you pull something out of the tower, and so the tower gets more and more wobbly. And if the tower ever falls over, then you die, which is an interesting mechanic because then it's luck. There's a bit of skill there. It's also inevitable. It's not inevitable that you're going to roll a 20 with a 20-sided dice, but it is inevitable that eventually the Jenga tower is going to fall over.
That's
So
right. That's right.
that is a it's a very visible kind of totem to your role playing that in the middle of the table, which can be powerful.
Yeah. There's a nice twist on the on this system in what's it called? There's a two-player game that uses the Jenga tower. I forgot. Oh yeah, that's Starcrossed is cool. In which it's not a, it's not there's this idea of mounting pressure basically, but it's a romance game. So the idea is that you play two people who are attracted to one another but can't really tell each other so for whatever reason. And if the tower falls, that's the end of the game. But not because they're dead, of course, but because like they decide, no, that's not going to work. Let's go our separate ways, and our love will never be,
I'm
which is,
sure you could
fascinating.
play it. I mean, Starcrossed is basically named after Romeo and Juliet, isn't it? And
That's right.
things don't go well for, like, I'm pretty sure they both
Well,
die at the
yeah.
end of Romeo and Juliet, don't they?
That, you can do a StarCraft game where everyone dies at the end if you want.
So there's probably many other options as well. I did find when I was reading about this online, quite a lot of people recommend, oh, you want a diceless system, use this. And then it was Fate of the Norns, which uses like runic crystals, which are basically like hexagonal dice with like runes written on them. And I was like, that's not thinking very outside of the box. But
There's actually a friend of mine, just very quickly, I have to mention them because the kind of games they write are also based on randomization, but with tokens, color tokens or color stones in a bag. And so you can, draw out a number of stones based on whatever situation, and then you have to make combination of colors. So That's pretty out there as a system, but again, I think it's a nice.
One of my favorite games is called Millennial Apartment Hunters by James DeMarto, who's actually been on the podcast episode.
What a title.
I'm not sure. Look, they're good episodes when they come on, but. In that you're basically doing we have a TV show called Location, 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 and in French it's probably called Location, Location, Location. it's people going and looking at houses to buy them. But what you do is you slowly make this bag full of beads worse. So you put more and more black beads in, and basically you all role play going around a house together, and you pull out a bead. If it's like, I don't know, if it's blue, then it's a good thing you see in the house. Oh, no, there's an ice cream machine in every room. And then if it's like red, it's something bad, like, but there aren't any stairs. There's just a slide, and you have to sort of jimmy your way up the stairs. And then black means like something horrendous, like it is inside a nuclear power station that occasionally leaks, you know. But what's cool about that is it does go, it's more and more, you know, the bag gets worse and worse as you go through the game. It's an interesting one there of theme mixing with the with the fate. And I think what we'll do now is we're going to go down that spectrum and going more and more against fate and more into where actually the players are in control. And before we get onto completely zero fate, I want to talk about tarot, which some people maybe don't love that much because it's kind of got a lot of occult kind of signifiers. Yeah. But aside from that, purely as a storytelling mechanic, and there's lots of types of sort of tarot that aren't even necessarily like official tarot decks, but just follow this idea where you get a card. So you are defined by whatever card randomly comes out, but it's got a theme on it. You know, like it's got water, for example, is on a card.
Right.
And so then, you know, if I'm seeing if I can drink my water, and then I pull a card that's just got water on it. What do I do with that prompt then? You see, so I've still had something from outside defining my, but you know, so if I pulled a lion and the lion means like victory, that kind of thing, you know, I could say, well, there you go, I succeed at drinking the water. No, and in fact, I feel really empowered as I do it, you know, whereas if I pull water, I could go either way. I could say water pours everywhere, or I could say the water has gone into me and I've really embodied the spirit of water, you know, and so it's somewhere between the two, isn't it? It's not completely, you know, you're not without agency, but also it's telling you it's giving you prompts.
Yeah, there's a French board game, but I think it's been translated in English, which is called Dixit, where you basically have to interpret picture cards. And I've seen some role-playing games use that. Like if you've got a Dixit at home, you can use that. And it's very nice because it's just one picture. There's not even, you know, one word on it. So you can interpret it. And it's usually like dreamlike pictures. So you can interpret them however you like. And that's also a very interesting way to use cards. Like it's not really going to decide whether I succeed or fail, but it's going to, like you said, direct me in a direction that I wasn't necessarily expecting. And I'm the one who's going to decide, you know, what's going to, if it's going to pass or fail, but I have to incorporate this in my narration. So I think, it's a good thing for people who are a little, nervous about complete improvisation. It gives you a direction. Sometimes maybe it's too restricting, but
Even sometimes it's too wide open as well, potentially. Mm. Like
that's true.
Dixit is available in English. There's also there's a sequel as well that's got a similar. It's about Mysterium, I think it's called.
The one about ghosts. Right?
Yeah, but both of them involve you basically trying to communicate with Mysterium. It has the same cards, but you are trying to communicate with a group and you're not allowed to talk. And so you're trying to give them clues, but you're showing them like a duck that's on fire, and you're trying to use that to communicate, no, don't do this, but they read it and they go, ah, we're getting warmer. You know, we're going in the right direction. So that's I often think in these situations of my wife, and my wife is a wonderful, incredible person who is not comfortable at all with improvisation. And if I passed her a card of a duck on fire when she was trying to drink some water in a game, she would just be very annoyed that, you know, like that now there was a terrifying thing in front of her that she had to think on her feet about. So what happens if you don't have any prompts?
Well, if you don't have any prompts, if you don't use, generally what happens is that you sort of remove this randomization idea. And like I said a little before, you put the players or the GM, the game master, back in control. So there's a lot of ways to do that. I think the most well-known is using tokens. We talked about color stones before. There are some games with color tokens or just, you know, plain tokens. And the most well-known example is in, a family of games, which are also what we call GM-less, so without any game master, like all players share the responsibility of telling the story. And it's the family of belonging outside belonging games. And so the wonderful One Home by Jay Dragon and the team of Possum Creek. So the basic idea, and it's very nice because it's very simple, but it's very powerful. You get what are called moves. So it's like actions that your character can do. And you've got, I think the basic version, you've got strong moves, regular moves or normal moves, whatever, and weak moves. And if you want to do a strong move, which, you know, like as the name indicates, is going to favor your character somehow, you have to spend the token.
Yeah.
But the problem is you start without any tokens. So what you have to do first is do a weak move, which is a move that puts your character in danger or just in a negative situation. And that gives you a token. So there's a nice, you know, economy where you have to put yourself into a bad situation to come out more victorious eventually. And it's very nice because you are the one as the player deciding when you do these moves. No one is forcing you to do that. And you can do regular moves, you know, all the time where you don't win tokens, but you don't have to spend them. So you're just like the regular guy. But if you want to be the hero, if you want to have your time in the spotlight, at some point, you're going to put yourself in danger. So that's a very nice way of controlling the narrative without this randomization aspect.
Yeah, I think I think Wonder Home even simplifies it a little bit more. So I think there is the option of like a regular action where you can do something and you sort of you receive a little bit of negativeness, but like not enough, right. You know, like not enough to harm you, just enough to shift that, you know. And I think they take that out. So you really just have those, you've got things that happen that just are part of the story, but don't necessarily impact you deeply. There are other games that use, that work without tokens as well. One that jumps to mind, I'm a big fan of Fiasco, which is...
That's right.
Again, a very kind of improvisational game where often you're kind of, I think the way they set it up is as a Coen movie. So you've got a Coen right. Brothers movie, but often it's a heist or something like that. And halfway through the story, there's a twist. And there is a little bit of dice rolling involved in it. But yeah. The core of the game is scenes. And you either choose to set the scene or you choose to resolve the scene. But actually... And so at that point, you give someone a colored dice. So really, it's more of a token, really, than a...
Yeah, it is.
So
I think the dice are just used as on random tables at the beginning. In
yeah, sort of right, exactly, right at the beginning there. But what that means is, you know, you can be, you know, like... So, you know, I'm drinking some water. I mean, that would be quite a boring fiasco scene, but I'm drinking some water. And so I decide, okay, I want this to be a scene where I get refreshed and resourced. And so I'm going to run into the kitchen and see what I can grab. But because I have set up the scenario, you then and the other players get to decide, okay, is this going to end well yeah. for me or end badly for me? But you try and do it in a way that it isn't just you have some water, but it's it's you are left with a lifelong kind of frustration about control in the kitchen or something, so the story's progressed by it, and I think that's the same in Belonging Outside Belonging. That it isn't just about things playing, there's always an idea of how things play into that bigger narrative that you're playing with.
Yeah, moving the story forward. Yeah, exactly. So tokens are most, I think, the most widely used method when you do without dice, but you can also actually do without anything at all. There's a whole, again, school of thought, I don't know how to call it, which is called, and I'm not sure either how to pronounce it, I think it's free Kriegsspiel or something. I've mostly seen it as FKR, and it's basically what I like about it. So it's freeform narration. Like you just talk basically. You've got, depending on a game, some indication of, you know, you can still have a character sheet which tell you, okay, your character is strong at doing that, but it doesn't know how to do that, etc. So you know, it's not completely improvisation. You still have some guidelines, but it's very much, going back to what we were doing. I was doing, I don't know if you were doing it as kids, where you're just telling a story between friends and you somehow decide what's happening. So it's sort of the root of role-playing games in a way. And I know that some people don't like it because they feel that it's giving too much control in games with a game master. They say, okay, but it's just arbitrary. Like the game master is going to decide everything. I'm not so sure. And then, you know, you can also play, but that's a whole different episode, but you can also play without a game master. So you don't have to give him that control.
Yeah, I think that's we could definitely fall into game. I don't think we've really covered Games Masters, actually, which, given that we're about 15 episodes in, is quite funny. I mean, we've talked about what they are, the GM being the person who runs each game. But yes. I think another game that was quite well known a few years ago, I feel it's not been talked about much, is a Microscope. Which is, and I think what's interesting in that game is, again, there's no dice. And it's actually a game without characters, really. You're creating like the story of a world. It's a great game for kind of the world building before you actually begin a campaign of something. But in that, what happens is you start off with a prompt. I'm trying to think of an example kind of question that you might ask. Something along the lines of, you know, three nations are united as a single empire. What kind of nations are they? And so you start putting things into categories, and it's all done with index cards so you end up with a table covered with things. But the thing that guides your choices in that game are the previous choices you've made. You begin to, you know, so we might say, is there sunlight on this world? No. So then suddenly everything that we're talking about is how things work in the dark, like corruption of photosynthesis or something like that. You're together, and again, that's a game that doesn't have a games master. You're all together, kind of building it. But you find yourself very quickly having similar things to a dice, where you are being sort of forced down certain paths, but in quite a fun narrative way that you've been in control of the kind of the origin of that.
Right. That's right. Yeah. Microsoft is a very good example. And actually, if you allow me to plug in one of my own games very quickly, I've talked about my Three Games About Life project at the beginning of the episode. And actually, one of them uses a theme or logic, I don't know, which is quite similar to Microscope. It's called Here and Now. I think I've got it somewhere here. Yeah. So it's basically very, very, you know, small games. And so you've got two halves. And in the first one, that's the French version, which I'm going to show the screen, is called Here. And the idea is that you will explore one place. So you decide at the beginning of the game where it's going to be, like, I don't know, let's say in front of a movie theater, for example. and you start in the present, and then you kind of jump around in time like Microscope does, to explore different moments in time, but in the same corner of space. Like, okay, what was this movie theater like 10 years ago, 50 years ago? What was this place like 2 centuries ago? What will it be in 3,000 years, etc.? So you kind of jump around using index cards.
What will this cinema be like in 3,000 years?
Yeah, there won't be any cinema, but you know, maybe it will be some kind of futuristic museum, which, you know, will show a museum, a cinema ticket, like people used in the years of the past.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe 500 years ago, it was like a plane where Vikings fought or whatever. So you kind of decide like this. And then, of course, you've got the other side of the coin, so to speak, which is a game called Now, which is where you explore different moments in time at different places on the planet, like sort of like in the Sense8 series, I think. I haven't seen it, so I don't know. But yeah, this idea of using index cards where you write stuff on it, which helps you remember what's been going on in the game. And I think Fiasco does that actually as well.
It reminds me a little bit of a game by someone you may have heard of them. They're called Tom Matin, called yes. Two Summers.
That brings someone to mind.
Yeah, yeah. But that's another one of your games where you've got, so it's not quite as freeform, the kind of the two time periods, but you've got two summers, like one. Yes. Now on one 30 years in the future or 30 years behind, and you explore the idea of being kids and then being adults at the same in the same place, but kind of interacting with different. Yeah. And I think I'm not sure if it's a token, but there's like a give and take in that system as well, isn't there?
Yeah, it uses a token system where basically you when you want to do an action, you just count the number of things on your character sheet that can help you, and if you have enough, you succeed. And one of the things you can count are tokens, which you gain by I think, if I remember correctly, taking care of your problems. You've got personal problems to solve, but taking care of them in the time period that you're not currently playing in. Like if you're in the adult time period, you can use the tokens of your teenage side and vice versa. And it's kind of freeform in the sense that it's the players who decide when to switch from one time period to another. So you're constantly on the two sides like this. So yeah, that's a very good example. Thanks for bringing it up.
So I think we've probably covered most of the well, we haven't covered everything. We never will. We can't be exhaustive. But I think
that's the basics.
We've gone the scale from completely mechanical, where dice control your every moment, and that's definitely the more traditional end of the spectrum. I think even the way that Dungeons and Dragons 5e, a lot of people play that now less like that. But if you go to the really mechanical earlier editions of D&D, what we often call OSR, old school revival, like you're really interacting almost with a kind of a war game in some ways, where you know, much like rolling dice in Warhammer 40k or something like that. But then you go all the way through to where the tokens or the cards or the, you know, the beads you're pulling out of a pool can adjust things a bit for you. They can give you prompts, they can give you ideas, all the way to where actually the only like narrative input in the game is the things that you are saying to each other sort of around the table.
Exactly.
Is there anything we've missed?
Probably.
Fine. Well, let's move on to an actual play where we will bring to life some of these ideas and illustrate it. So let's do that now. Okay. Welcome to our actual play starring me, CM Lowry, and we've got Tom Matin. And we are playing a new game that we have just invented that has absolutely no dice rolling whatsoever, completely, completely diceless. And we are What was your suggestion? School kids.
My suggestion was Cool Kids, and then but that's the game designer talking. When I'm talking about, you know, I'm thinking about kids, so I'm thinking about marbles, and then my brain goes, oh, we should, you know, create a game that uses marbles, but we can't do it on this podcast, so let's not do that.
Well, I like the idea of the school kids. Something you mentioned earlier was about jumping back 500 years and you're on an old burial ground kind of thing. So why don't we be children playing with sort of marbles, like kind of Viking children playing with marbles, but they're actually
like the bones and the
finger bones on, and we're on a battlefield.
Exactly. But it's not
we haven't done a safety chat here. We're not going to get morbid. There's not going to be any death here.
No.
But actually, just it's quite common for like the finger bones to become collectibles and to be to be played. So we're there. What's your character called? Come on, a really French name.
Our real French name. Well, I think, I don't know, like well, let's say Martin, because Martin is actually a very French first name as well as family name. So,
well, that's what I'm going to be, Christophe.
Okay.
Really stepping outside the box there. We've both gone with our own names.
That's right. Yeah.
So
are you telling me you want to do the actual play in French?
What we can do, that thing. Have you ever read, there's a book series I love called Monsieur Pomplemousse, which is by the same person who wrote Paddington. But what they actually do in that is they drop just enough French in that it feels super French. But also, there's like, you know, it's like, you know, so he went to the, said, menu, s'il vous plaît.
Yes,
and like, it's like, you know, it's a menu, like, if, you know, but if you don't know the French,
okay,
we can drop a bit of French in.
Okay.
Apologies to anyone who doesn't speak French. I barely speak French myself, so join the club. So describe Martin for me.
Okay, so Martin, I think, is let's say somewhere about around 8, and I imagine him as a sort of scruffy kid who, you know, he has his share of fights and things like that. So probably always something, you know, he's always got a small injury somewhere on him, and his clothes are always a little torn or something, which, you know, his parents are always annoyed by. And what he likes to do is you know, just play in the streets and you know, spend some time as much time outside of school as possible.
Yeah, so, and I think we're in like a I don't know exactly our time setting. I think we said sort of Viking. So the schooling's quite a basic kind of like village life, kind of becoming, and it's about becoming, you know, to not to become patriarchal or whatever, but it's maybe about becoming a man, becoming an adult, you know, fulfilling your role within the, and so I'm going to be Christophe. I am the oldest child of the town's warlock, sort of like not necessarily a magician, but a kind of semi-religious, semi kind of figure of legend kind of person in the town. So there's a lot of expectation set on me, and I'm absolutely a rebel. I'm not part of that. I'm a skinny, wiry kid. What I actually like to do is I like to run. I like to just run for hours through the forest on the edge of this. So there's a battlefield. We've got the village, and then there's the forest. What's the weather like today?
Well, it's very sunny, actually. Very cold. Let's say we're at the beginning of March, for example. and so, yeah, it's a good day to be outside. And I think it's probably a good day to run and do a lot of physical activities, because it's a little cold. So we have to, you know, be physical to not get cold.
Sure. So if I can,
probably somewhere in the forest or in the battlefield.
So if I can suggest this, and this is one of the things that you do in diceless games and things that don't have a GM, is you can suggest stuff and then you can both go nah or maybe, or and you have to have quite a comfortable relationship with one another to like not, which obviously we've only just met, but never mind. But like where you can understand that you can suggest an idea and no idea is too stupid, but also you're not in control of the narrative. Together you're shaping it. So I'd like to suggest that you're playing with your finger bones, like you've just found a nice corner and maybe just tucked out of the wind, and I'm running past just having kind of some of my like weird wild nature time, and then I see you and we're maybe not really friends.
No, I don't think so. I don't think Martin is friends with anyone. So it's just like in the probably I found the bones on the battlefield and I brought them back. And so I'm like at the periphery of the village, like, you know, somewhere where I know no one's going to bother me. And no one really comes in that part of the village, except, of course, you come at this moment. So I'm just like all alone rolling my bones, doing whatever with them, like little pyramids or I don't know.
So I see you. Martin, what have you got there?
Oh, Christophe, I tried to hide the bones, but of course it's too late. So you've seen me, you know. Oh, well, that's nothing. You know, just some stuff I found over there. What are you doing here? Don't you have your wizard meeting to go to or something?
None of that is your business. What have you got there? Tell me.
Well, and
actually, I think I'm going to imbue my words with a little bit of this weird wizardliness that we haven't really defined. You know, so like, there's a power to what I'm saying. Like, tell me, have you seen have you read Dune, like the Besser Generate,
right,
who can like command? You know, I haven't got that. I'm a kid, but there's a level of authority to what I'm saying that's almost magical.
And you're older than me, so that's the authority right there. So I think that, yeah, like the words come out of my mouth without me really wanting to. And I say, these are finger bones, but that's not of your business either. That's mine, either way.
Why do you have those? Pourquoi?
Parce que Well, if you want to know, I was wondering about, you use these sort of things, no? To like tell the future or something?
That's the dark magic. My father would be angry if we were even discussing that.
Okay. And when you say that, I think I raise my eyebrows because I'm not friends with you, but it's probably known that you're the sort of rebel of the family. So, you know, I'm like teasing you to go into that.
Yeah, and I love that because there's two ways that we could take that. There's either you being like chicken or poulet.
poulet.
Poulet,
we would say in French.
Isn't it weird that we have the same word for being a wimp, like as in anyway? But so either we could do that, or I could be like, my father would be very angry, and I kind of with a little bit of a smile at the end of like my almost like, there's an idea here. And I think, you know, we don't even need to flesh it out, do we? We can just say there's something there, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
Okay. You know what? I think we could probably stop there.
All right.
Like, yes. Because I think what we've done there, we had no game. We've got no system. Okay. But we're about to do something weird with these bones, you know,
right.
Like as in, and that could lead us into time travel, it could lead us into getting cursed, like, but I think what
my other idea was to say, okay, if you don't want to tell the future with it, we can sit down and play a game where we make up a story and we let the bones decide whether, you know, we can invent role-playing games right there.
Nice. That's super meta. and then in that game, we could play some people running a podcast in the future. I was just starting to get really into it. And in a way, I'd like to carry it on. But obviously, we like to not make our podcast super long. Uh-huh. And I think what we demonstrate, though, is just how much potential there is there. Like, I think two of us could have gone missing. And we could then... The beauty of playing something that's as freeform as this is we don't have to be stuck to our characters. So we could disappear and then we could go to 2 weeks later in the village. Those kids have not been seen, or even they've never existed. You know, like and what diceless, and like to a degree, what we're saying here is almost systemless role play, which is, I suppose that is, isn't it? That we were talking about what else have we forgotten? Well, if you go all the way to the end of that, that's what you've got there. You do have that freedom that in a more formulaic system, even something like one of your games that you've talked about there, you're going off the beaten path of what the game's designed for there. Whereas if you're playing this kind of thing like we are, you can do literally whatever you want.
That's right. Yeah. And isn't that, you know, what role-playing games are all about?
Isn't that what role-playing games are all about? Brilliant. So you've been listening to What is Roleplay? And we've been talking about diceless roleplay games. Tell us a little bit more about your latest project, Com.
Yes. Okay. So my latest project, which I've already mentioned, is three games about life. So the idea is that before I wrote longer games like Meanwhile in the Subway and Two Summers and Feather Adventures, etc.
How Meanwhile in the Subway is classed as one of your longer games, but it's also like an A2 map.
Yes, it's a larger game, let's say. But anyway, I started out as a game designer by writing one-page games, basically on you know, and most of them were very experimental, but I've never been able to bring them to print, and so that's what I'm doing right now. And what I'm doing is sort of regrouping some of these games under the games which are you know, thematically the same. And so the first collection is about, well, it's three games about positivity, about life, like the little things that make up a life. Because, you know, I think we can use some positivity right now. So the first one I've already talked about is called Here and Now. The second one is called The Seventh Rainbow, and in which it's all of them are diceless, by the way. And in The Seventh Rainbow, you play, you explore the life, you tell the life of one protagonist, which you share the control of, and you jump around in time. You play six scenes in the life of this protagonist to sort of, you know, discover who they were and what their life were like. And then at the end, you play their funeral, basically. And the last one is a two-player game, which is called She Stayed, You Traveled, She Traveled, You Stayed. And in this one, you play two witches who meet again. They had a big adventure 30 years ago. Like they were in a coven and they fought demons and all that sort of stuff. And then the group broke apart for some reason. And two of those witches meet again 30 years later. And so one of them carried on, you know, being an adventurous witch and going all over the world and all of that. And the other one, you know, settled in, like she had a family of her own, maybe she became a baker or whatever. And so they meet to sort of catch up and talk about the past. And what you play is this meeting, is this conversation. You know, what are these two people going to speak about 30 years after the last meeting? And how are they fantasizing the life of the other, basically?
Yeah, like the kind of, yeah, grass is always greener on the other side, sort of thing.
Exactly.
Nice, and that's three different little folding zines,
yeah,
isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so we did the Kickstarter as part of ZineQuest. I'm saying we because I worked with Nicolas Folio, who is the graphic designer of Two Summers and Meanwhile in the Subway as well. And right now we're in the we're on the 8th of March as I'm speaking. We're in the late pledge phase, and then, you know, the games will be available wherever role playing games are sold.
Indeed, I imagine we've got most of your other games, so I imagine Beyond Cataclysm will probably end up getting those in as well. I suppose if I was going to push about a couple of my games, because I hadn't really thought about it, but I have got a couple of diceless ones. We've got A Set of Scrubs, which is built on the Lost and Found system by Jack Harrison, and it's a game where you play as a set of scrubs in hospital, like the hospital clothes that people wear. And it is all just prompts about, you know, the nurse wears you, what secret do they hide in your pocket and things like that. And you go through, so you never care about the scrubs. Like they never have a personality. It's all about the lives of the people that wear them. And at the end you get incinerated. And again, it's not in a, oh no, I'm dead kind of way. It's just in a, their time as an inanimate object has ended. So we've got that. We've also got, so you can buy that on our store. We're in the kind of late pledge slash pre-order phase of ISBN coffee. So we did that last year as Beyond Cataclysm, which is a bag of coffee with its own ISBN number. And then because you're not allowed to do that, we've done a book with an ISBN number and then printed that on the coffee. But in there, there's lots of very diceless stuff because it's prose and poetry, like stories and things. But there's quite a few games in there, and some of those games are designed, and the prompts for them are, so one of them's called, I think it's called A Sip of Coffee. It's by CJ Eggett, who has also been on the podcast. And what you do there is you take sips of coffee, and then you forget about the game. And then when you remember about the game, you think about your memory of your last sip of coffee. Like, Whoa. Was it warm? Was it fulfilling? Was it? And then those are your prompts for what happens in the story. So it's a game that might take a week or two. It's very abstract. It's incredibly thematic to coffee as well. And we've got quite. I think there's about four or five role play games in the book, and that is available at beyondcataclysm.co.uk as well. So good, Com. Thank you very much for being on the show. We've really...
Thank you so much.
We narratively interacted really well there. That was fun. We should do some more role play together. That was a pleasure. Where can people find you on the internet?
Well, they can find my games on... I got an itch.io page. So it's commartin.itch.io. I've got a Mastodon account on, I think it's Dice Camp or something. I got an Instagram account. I've got all sorts of accounts. There's not a lot of Co-Martins. I think there's only another semi-famous one. So if you type my name in a search bar, you will find me somehow.
Nice. I'm Chris Lowry. You can find me as @CMLowry on most of the social medias, even as some of them die and others of them are like Dice Camp something and then you don't know how to find it. There are other Chris Lowry's out there, including a sci-fi author who is much more successful than me. Given that I write sci-fi, that's a bit annoying. Never mind. You can find me at allaboutchris.org. There'll be links to everything we've talked about and all of Com Martin's stuff in the show notes below. And we're pretty much done. As you know, Beyond Cataclysm is an independent micro publisher and shop. We aim to combine heart and excellence in all our projects, and we work with passionate people to bring their words to life, share news of other incredible work, and support charitable causes in the process. If you've enjoyed this podcast, if you've enjoyed our other podcasts, we've mentioned Wonder Home with Jay Dragon. Jay's actually been on our other podcast, This Book I Read, talking about books that we've enjoyed. So you could check that out as well. Please think about supporting us on Patreon. You'd be one of a very, very select few of people, but it would be really helpful to us. And you can find @BeyondCataclysm on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and you can check out beyondcataclysm.co.uk to buy cool things. Thank you, Com Martin. Any tips for people wanting to, as a final for the show, any tips that you would have for someone embarking on diceless roleplay games?
Yeah, I think just use the logic of improv theater, which is to when someone says something, offers a prompt or whatever, sometimes our first instinct is to say no or I don't know. Try just to say yes, and then build on that thing, unless of course it's something gross that you don't want to deal with, of course. But try to be more open-minded than you are generally. That would be the first thing. And the other thing is try to just, the first thing that comes into your mind is generally, it's not necessarily the best idea, but it's generally a good idea, or at least an idea that you can build on. So accept what others offer you and say the first thing that comes out of your mouth, of your mind, sorry. And then you will build something with that.
I think that's great advice. Thank you very much, Com. We'll see you soon.
My pleasure.
Thanks for listening. Bye.